Hi, I'm Mike Holby, President and CEO of the RAB, and welcome to Radio on Main Street, the podcast all about radio. Recently, we attended the NAB show in Las Vegas. Over a five-day period, the convention brought together over 61,000 attendees. Some were our closest friends of the RAB. Now, the buzz in the convention center in Las Vegas was high. There was lots of conversations about recruitment, sales, innovation, and of course, AI. RAB Immediate Past CEO Erica Farber and I had the opportunity to sit down with thought leaders from the industry, and we talked about what their plans were for the future. A big thank you to Inco and Bennstown for allowing us to record live in their exhibit booth on the floor of the convention. We did that every day while we were in Vegas. Over the next several weeks, you will have the opportunity to listen in to some of those conversations. In this third episode of the series, we will hear a live stream conversation that I had with Jason Barrett, who is the owner and operator of Barrett Sports Media. Prior to launching BSM, Jason was an accomplished radio sports programmer.
Radio on Main Street is live from the NAB. Good afternoon. I am Mike Holby, President and CEO. I guess that would be co-president and CEO, along with Erica Farber, who, by the way, as we are broadcasting and doing our live stream today, she is on the other side of the convention center receiving a Lifetime of Service Award from the MIWs. And what can you say about Erica Farber?
She's the best. Had known her for about 8 years. Not probably the interactions that you have, because you guys talk a lot more, but I've had her at our events, and just a super sharp mind and a real big advocate for our industry.
Well, this is Jason Barrett, and he's going to join us for the next half hour. And you have done, and I follow you on social media and consume your content, but you have tapped into certainly one of the hottest formats in broadcast today, and that is sports. Mm-hmm. And you work all sides of it. Give us a little sample about what your business is like, and then what's an average week for you?
I'll start with the business. I started it in 2015. I had spent 20 years in radio, started a small station, worked my way up, got to the network level, worked at ESPN. Then I got the privilege of building a few stations in St. Louis, Philadelphia, San Francisco. After that, decided I want to go home, want to be near family, start this, figure it out. All right, if I could just keep the lights on at home, I could get my family. But where I live, Mike, I'm about an hour and a half north of New York City. It's not the area you go to build a radio career,
right,
or to end it. So I just thought, all right, well, I got to do something different. I was writing a lot. People in the industry started to read what I was putting out. Next thing you know, two clients become three clients, become four clients. We wind up going from the first 4 years I was writing everything to now having a staff of 25, six of them full time. And it's, every day's a grind. I mean, I don't sleep outside of maybe 4 hours a day. But when you love what you do, you don't care about the time you put in, because one, it's mine. I built it. Nobody could fire me. I can only fire myself. If we don't do well, it's on me. But, get up in the morning, 6, start working probably 6:37, go to sleep at midnight, and, the weekends are where I get a little bit of downtime. But it's all-encompassing, because I consult clients, I publish content on sports media, I publish content on news media, we host conferences in both spaces, and I stay connected across the entire format, sports and news. And, because I know it, because I did it for so long, it's content that I could talk about all day because I'm close to it. And so it's just finding another way to stay in the space without having to take attendance every day and go to a building.
Let's go back in Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine, a reference to the cartoons of the past. As a kid growing up in the Midwest, myself, I would love to listen to the sports writers on WGN on Sunday afternoon, and then I would hear a bowling report, the 10-pin tattler. I think it was Bernie something that would, I always thought about the cigar chomping. but and it was like, for me as a kid, that was like appointment listening.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the sports content of the day.
Yeah.
Along comes some guy from Indianapolis by the name of Smullyan, and the next thing you know, you have a real format.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Jeff took the ultimate risk. He was willing to lose a lot of money for a few years to get it to where it had to go. And, you know, he's been candid that the first few years of WFAN in New York, they didn't have the right strategy. Eventually, they got it right. And you look at where we are now today, you've got roughly 700 sports stations. That's not including all these digital outlets and television. And it's just an exploding medium. The one thing that it does, it taps into passion. It taps into local credibility and information, because you have to have a human connection with an athlete, a coach, a GM, to be able to relay that information. And it's live. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, we're at the NAB here where people can talk about all sorts of technological differences that are going to shape the industry going forward. Sports is really hard to replicate and just turn on to automation, because you need 45 minutes of content an hour in a radio world, television, and you have to have human access to people and get their trust to share information. And the fandom from the people who consume the content, I mean, it's rapid. People spend 3 to 6 hours a day consuming this stuff. So if they're not listening to it or watching it, they're reading about it on social media or on a website or a newsletter.
So what is next in sports media? What do you see on the horizon?
I mean, look, I think a lot of it, when we think about next, I don't think there's going to be like this second wave of AI. I think it's trying to figure out, how do we work with AI? How do we, like radio operators, what's your strategy on YouTube to not only generate audience, but generate revenue? What is your live event strategy? What is your merchandising strategy? I'll be candid. I think a lot of times, we've been talking about this for 8 years, and people are slow to move. And it's, you know, it's understandable. When the majority of your business comes from spots and endorsements, it's hard to look and say, let's spend 50% of our time on a live event or merch strategy. The reality is, the business isn't growing from a revenue standpoint, radio. So you have to find ways to generate dollars in other areas. I think AI will become a bigger part of what we do, especially, you look at, do you need a sports update anchor when you could literally have somebody just regurgitate 6 headlines who's an automated voice? No, you don't need it. Websites, do you need to write press releases when AI could just pump it out in 30 seconds? Probably not. The personality, though, who dominates discussion and makes you tune in, that's going to be impossible to duplicate. So I think, you know, talent are really key to this. What I do wonder is the middle manager. Eventually, you've got to be more than just a radio programmer. I was a radio programmer 10 years ago, but I was already into podcasting, video, social. I'm obviously a publisher. I knew a lot more than just how to run a radio station. Folks who only know how to run a radio station, they're in a tough spot. You're going to have to evolve, and you better evolve quickly, because tomorrow's generation, the 22-year-old, he's growing up in a very, very different way than the way we grew up on content. You know, you mentioned the WGN example. I grew up on WFAN on the weekend, WFAN. I just loved the radio. But today, my son, who's 22, he grows up with KFC from Barstool on Instagram, and he watches them for 2 minutes. He doesn't care about 45 minutes. He looks at 45 minutes and says, I could have watched 20 pieces of content. Why would I listen to one? So it's just a different world. And as new things come around, you got to adapt. Long story short, with all of that, the dashboard is key. Because if all of a sudden you can watch content, if you're just a person who could talk into a microphone, that's not going to work. You've got to be a multi-platform superstar, or it becomes hard to stay ahead of the game.
Let's stay on that topic, but let's go down the commerce side of that. Mm-hmm. So, understanding the consumption realities, what are you seeing with your radio clients in terms of the commerce side, the business side of it? How they're able to leverage that and activate that with their local business community? Let's talk about that.
Funny,
side
I was
of
just
it.
Having a chat with a market manager out in the hall before coming over here, who has an event coming up for the NFL draft that will have 1,400 people in a room. Understood, it's going to require a $10,000 investment to make 50. you have to be willing to spend money. The old adage, I mean, how many times have we heard, you got to spend money to make money, but everybody gets tight these days. I had a client, I won't say who literally would not launch a t-shirt campaign without an 8-to-1 guarantee coming back. And my response was, so you have zero, and you're not good with 4-to-5-to-1? The competition in that market took the exact thing I talked about at a conference, went to market, sold 10,000 shirts the next month. And I sit there and I go, that's the kind of antiquated thinking we can't have. You've got to understand that, you know, like when I talk about merchandising, for example, go ask the WWE, Barstool Sports, Outkick, if they think there's no money in merch. They all make six figures in merch. In the WWE's case, it's a global brand. They make $50 million on it, right? So there's people like to spend money to tell people that they like your brand. Why would we not be in that space? Live events. People like to go out. They don't want to just sit at a computer. But you have to put on a show. Look at what WFAN has done in New York with Boomer and Geo Live. It makes money. Score North in Minneapolis does it. There are brands everywhere that understand it. But you still have a lot of folks who are timid to say, we're going to guarantee that. And I just think, you know, we got to get back to taking risks. I run two conferences a year. Do you think I run them because I'm going to go broke on them? If we were going to do that, I wouldn't run them. But I put on a great event. If you put on a great event, people will support it, and you'll make money on it. But you got to be willing to roll the dice. Otherwise, we're just going to be sitting here waiting for everything to come back, and it's not going to do that. So you got to find new ways to monetize.
So what inspires you? And we're connected on social media, so I watch you and your son, and you know, a couple weeks ago, maybe it was last weekend, you're in Philly and you're outside watching a wrestling match. And then and then you're off to some NFL stadium and watching a game and buying some merch. And then, you know, the next week you're at some NBA thing, having an experience. And because I also am motivated by sports, I get cues about the economics of the world and opportunities. So I know that happens to me, and you and I are cut from some of that same cloth. What inspires you? And then when you go into environments like that, what are you looking at and what are you looking for?
What inspires me, I just love this business. I got into it, and when I first started, I was on the air, did imaging, sold advertising, did remotes, did play-by-play. So I was built on do everything. And it's how I run my business now. It's no different than what I started 25 years ago. I just happen to be the guy who was a board op making $100 a week for 40 hours a week, and I worked 70 because I loved it. What inspires me now is I want to help clients, and I want to, first of all, I love what we do. We get to reach a lot of people every day with what we publish, and to be able to shape a conversation around a format is really inspiring. You get people reading your content saying, I got smarter, I was able to take an idea and turn it into something actionable. Like, I love that. On the radio side, I want to work with, you know, whether I'm working with a college, which I do, or whether I'm working with a skilled operation that produces a lot of revenue, I want to find ways to help people be better in areas they're not. Like, I have one station that is a number two biller locally in its market, dominates the market as far as content. Everyone knows what the brand is. And the first discussion we had, I said, I'm not here to talk to you about your radio station. I'm here to tell you your social media strategy is garbage, and you guys have a website that looks like it was born in 1992 and it's still there. That's where I'm going to put my focus. I'm not here to tell you about your radio content because I didn't want to be. First, you'll learn about me. I don't like the word consultant. I think it's an antiquated term that tells people this is a guy who analyzes ratings. I don't just do that. I consider myself a business partner. My job is to help you figure out how to grow audience, how to grow revenue, how to be dominant on social, podcast, radio, video. I work with some TV groups. Like, to me, it's all relative, you know? And then it's just, what does this particular situation need? And so that's what drives me. Like, I'm driven by the work I do. I'm driven by helping people in the industry go, we get better and smarter reading their work. And then ultimately, when they come to our events, seeing it in action, too. So I just feel if you do quality work, enough people say good things about you, and ultimately you create a book that's worth reading at the end of your career.
It's a good way to put that. All right. I'm sure working with clients and stations around the country, you've had some moments where you go, that was really good. When I say that, and so that, I'm going to put that in the form of a question. When you've had one of those moments that was really good, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
On air, probably San Francisco. I was programming at the time, 95.7 The Game. Literally sat in a meeting, told the entire staff, get a good look around. Half this room won't be here next year. And they all looked like, uh-oh. And I said, here's the reality. You're going to get a network job. You're going to go on to another market. You're going to continue to move up. And when we ultimately started the station, we were 33rd. And I told people we'd be top five in 4 years. We were third, fourth, and third my last three books. And so when you see a plan and you see people buy into a culture and a strategy and it come to life, that's exciting. The second part of that is when I started that station, it was a market that was very diverse but had no diverse talent on. And I created a contest and I told people, we did a promotion called Lucky Break. And I said, the goal of this is to find a diverse, dynamic talent in this market. If we find somebody who's middle-aged, white, and he's great, fine, we'll do that. But I'm really doing this for one reason, because I know there's a lack of representation. Found a guy, put him on the air. He's now in middays and has been for over a decade. And when you see that, and it led to, like, there were three other people in that. One's now on Alice in the morning show. Another one was on Nights for 6 years. When you see something you create lead to four or five people having a career, that's as rewarding as it can be. Aside from the on-air programming side, as a consultant, I love when I work with a brand and, you know, I have one client. We came up with a strategy when Trevor Lawrence was coming out for the NFL draft. They're in Jacksonville. And we came up with, at the time, before this Manning cast started, we did a thing called the Trevor Cast. 6 weeks podcast series that's going to culminate on the Thursday of the draft. It produced revenue locally, produced impact on not just the radio, but also on the podcast, led to a growth spurt on YouTube. When you see a strategy come to life and people execute and it touch all the key points, that's what you do this for. So much of this is, do you have an idea and how do you execute it? And if you execute it right and it does what you're supposed to do, it's nothing better.
All right, so I'm gonna ask you for some free consulting services. And I know that our viewers, and we have our live viewers right now, something's gonna happen here in a few hours, but likely a lot of folks will be consuming this later. So I'm gonna put you on the spot. I know you do work in Indianapolis, right? And what has happened in women's college basketball this year is absolutely amazing. And it's not just because of one person, but certainly one person has been at the focal point of that, and that is Miss Caitlin Clark.
Yep.
Playing at the University of Iowa, two times make it to the national championship game, unsuccessful against an amazing South Carolina. But I promised Erica we weren't talking sports, so I'm not going down that path. But Caitlin's going to be drafted number one on the day that we are recording this podcast. So you consult, and I know you do work in Indianapolis, but so take that branch. You have this amazing athlete, Caitlin Clark. She's coming into a smaller community. You're consulting Station X, whatever it is. I know you actually do, but what are those tactical recommendations that you would bring, because this is a very big deal that radio can capture?
So there's two parts to it. The first thing has got to be today. What are we doing with the draft, right? So obviously it has to be a dominant discussion. Got to have social content. Got to have, are you on site for live event to monetize? Do you have a shirt created that's going to, help get around the trademark issue and help the local brand make money?
That'll be our next session with the lawyer. So go ahead.
Then becomes after today, okay, how do we move this forward? Are you doing a deal with her? Are you doing a deal with a vendor who's got a deal with her? Are you doing a merch strategy? What's your live event strategy when she starts playing her first game, her second game? All of this is, when people are into something, your job is to get in there and make it available everywhere. Like, you've got to have content on YouTube, content on X, constant content on Instagram, radio. Are you partnering with a TV station? Do you have a merch plan? Do you have a live event plan? All of it goes together. When you can do a deal, and this, I've done a lot of deals with players and I've had markets where I didn't do any. When you can do it, then you can monetize in a much greater way. But that requires an investment. So, and that also requires the athlete wanting to do it. You know, sometimes Caitlin Clark gets there and goes, look, I got plenty of money, and I just want to focus on basketball. I don't want to do anything. Okay, maybe we can only do one event. It's an annual live show. Maybe it's a tapping into a charity and you find a way to connect that way. Maybe you're just working with a vendor who's gonna, you know, it's an advertiser who's gonna put her voice on spots, whatever the way you want to approach it. I think part of the main thing, though, is you got to be part of the Caitlin Clark universe, because you realize that, hey, in this town right now, this is a big deal. And the beauty of sports is it changes every day. So this is really hot right now. And a month from now, there'll be something else that's red hot. So when that happens, you do the same thing, rinse and repeat. And so I wish I had a more like, wow, here's this hidden gem that, but it's not. It's literally, this is going on. How do I react in real time? What are the five or six ways we're going to do this and make it important? And then ultimately, how do we turn it into profitability? Because you can get people to listen to a lot of things that are hot. How do you monetize it? That's at the end of the day the key.
All right, the future. Young people. You've mentioned young people and seeing young folks here in sports. And we haven't talked a lot about news, you know, in our conversation today. But young people engaging in the medium of radio, and we all agree the definition of radio has changed, which is terrific. What is your advice to young people about getting into our business?
It's interesting. We're having this chat. I just went to a university last week in Florida where I talked to 14 students about getting into the business. 13 of the 14 didn't even mention wanting to get into radio. They wanted to get in social media. They want to work for teams. They want to create content. It's why I tell people we're not in the radio business, not the podcast business, the TV business. We're in the content business. The content business is still red hot. Kids today just want to create content. They don't care where the hell it gets distributed. So they got a phone in their hand. They got a radio station. You and I had to put one at our desk and pay for it. They just get the phone, hit the button, and they're live reaching the world. So I think the bottom line with young people, the first thing is you have to practice doing content. I don't care if you're on Instagram, YouTube, a podcast, or a radio station. You got to get good at your delivery, because just because you can create content doesn't mean people are going to want to listen to it or watch it. So getting better at it, you know, first of all, there's nothing like the live element. It doesn't matter what platform you're on. You love creating something and seeing people respond to what you're producing. So for them, I know there's still a heavy demand and excitement with young people to create content. The bigger challenge is for radio groups finding them. You have to go to where they are. They're not coming to you in the inbox like they used to. And I don't know if you saw the Adam Sandler remake, The Longest Yard. But there's a great line in there where Adam Sandler goes to Michael Irvin on the basketball court and he says, you must be quite the athlete. Michael Irvin says, you risked coming into the jungle because you know I am. And I tell people that's recruiting with the business all the time. My best talent I ever found, I've put people on in market four who had never done full-time radio, and they weren't ex-athletes. And people thought I was nuts. And I said, someone with an ability to make you listen for the next 5 minutes is who I want to be in business with. I could teach them how to tease. I could teach them how to set up a topic. Someone who's commanding and gets the room's attention, you either have that or you don't. Young people want to get in the media business, whether they want to do it on social, TV, radio. I think a lot of it, when you look at college kids, they haven't lived a life yet where they're in a car at 25, 26. You change when you become 27, 28. Now you got to pay a mortgage, and you can't just do shows on Instagram. So I think that's where we have, you know, some value. We could pay a kid to start his career. At the same token, the good ones, you got to go find them, and they're out there. But you can't just, I'll develop this board op, and he'll become my future afternoon host, or go to a small market. They don't need to go to a small market. They'll live at home, create content, build 5,000 fans on social, and you'll have to hire them because they're good. So,
what do you want the radio industry to know about the radio industry from your perspective?
I love the radio industry. I think the radio industry sometimes stands in its own way. We all know the narratives. Revenue has been flat to down, right? Which means, where is it coming from? Well, digital continues to grow. Everybody knows that. But what are we doing on Instagram, X, YouTube to make sure that we're not just saying we're getting crumbs off of AdSense? That's little bit. What are we doing to make real money in these spaces? I gave you the 8-to-1 example before. When you have zero, you need to open your mind and say, listen, show me how we make 100,000 here, 100,000 here. Eventually, to grow, you got to try 5 or 6 different things. And so I still think there's a lot of great talent, a lot of great brands. We've got local trust in a lot of communities. I think sometimes we operate out of the playbook of, we know what works. We did that 20 years ago. We're not 20 years ago. And what we're going to be in the next 10 years can be rapidly different than where we are today. And so the biggest thing I would just say is open your mind and get out of your own way. I have to do it myself sometimes. You know, I remind people now, I just turned 50. I'm about 4 years away from being out of the demo, right? So what still feels cool to me is not cool to a 32-year-old. So I have to live through the lens of, okay, what drop would I play? What song would I play on a station? Well, that was cool to me, but it's not cool to a 32-year-old. So whatever he or she is into, get in there. And I mentioned she because I think, especially in sports, we've built this case around men 25-54. Says who? That was what we built on in 1992 and 1989. It's 2024. You just mentioned Caitlin Clark. We were at a breakfast this morning where I saw a flood of hands go up from women who buy tickets, merch, going, women are part of this conversation now. So, first of all, sports stations shouldn't be narrowcast. Why are we not playing in the adults 25-54 space? And what are you doing to make sure that you have success in that space? You're not going to do it with just the same, you know, representation on the air. Got to have women on, got to have diverse voices on. And if you don't do that, I think you're not following the trends of where the world's going.
Good advice. Thank you for sharing it. Erica's favorite last question. Radio matters because?
Because it's still live, local, and produces human connection. You know, people love to be entertained. Like, I have a line I use all the time when I'm talking to sports stations. People like to hear people talk with and about other people. It's everything about the media universe revolves around that. So as long as, like this conversation right now, we have a group watching us. Why? Because people are fascinated by discussion. They like to be informed and entertained. And so the key is doing it really well. If you do it really well and are compelling, you'll always find an audience. Then you just got to figure out, where do I put that content? Where can I monetize that content? But radio is still very much vibrant and alive and well. We just got to become more than just radio. We have to be audio content. I mean, it's got to be played in every single arena, because there's no reason that in 5 years TV stations should be dominating audios. Audio could make the case that it should be, TV should be having these discussions going, how do we make sure audio stars today don't become the video stars tomorrow, and vice versa? That's a good problem for all of us.
All right. Jason, thank you. And for the record, my 10-year-old granddaughter has requested a 22 Indiana Fever jersey. So there is what you say is true.
See, now the radio station has to create something, so she spends her money on the radio station's brand, not on the Indiana Fever.
Jason, thank you.
You got it. My pleasure, Mike. Enjoyed it.
While Jason and I had the opportunity to discuss two of my favorite topics, radio and sports, the lessons that he has learned from his days as a radio programmer and now a consultant hold true for any radio format. With the sports radio formats continuing to explode, there's now over 700 sports stations across the country. It enables broadcasters to tap into the passion and credibility of live and local events. Radio offers a fan base a very human connection. Jason also shared his perspective on how to grow a radio sports brand using Caitlin Clark as an example. Now, I love to hear that because she is now a resident of Indianapolis. So are we. At the end of the day, it all comes down to a listener's trust and radio's unique live and local ability to produce connections.
If you'd like to learn more about radio and its many benefits, we invite you to visit us at rab.com, or you can email us directly at askrab@rab.com. Until next time, it's Radio on Main Street.